This is Digital Story Podcast number 841, May 3rd, 2022. Today's theme is Mother's Day and Other Great Family Photos. I'm Derek Story. Some folks will be spending time with their family this weekend thanks to Mother's Day on Sunday. Generally speaking, moms don't like to have their pictures taken, but I have a few tips for you in today's show that will not only help you get her in front of the camera, but will also ensure she looks great in the picture. I hope you enjoy the show. So Mother's Day is a great excuse for families to get together. And during the spring weather in North America, sometimes we get a beautiful day to do so. So, you know, we can hang around outside. We can have a family picnic in the backyard. We can do all sorts of things that really make family photography a bit easier. Now, that doesn't mean easy, right? Easier doesn't mean easy. It just means that it puts a few things in our favor as photographers to record some family memories. Now, to further your cause, in other words, to put more odds in your favor, I have five tips for you today that will help you if you want to document, if you want to get some nice shots during a gathering that you may or may not be having. It may not be this weekend for Mother's Day. It may be at some other time. These will work all spring, all summer, and really just about any time you can get people outside and pulled together. So here we go. I got five things for you. I'm going to be focusing, though, on mom and mom-related things because it is Mother's Day. So we'll start out with no solo portraits. Okay, no solo portraits. Very few moms will stand for a solo portrait, right? And especially in a group setting where there's lots of other people around, she just feels too self-conscious. It just a lot of times doesn't work. Now, there are always exceptions to this, but I think the rule is that solo portraits are not the best way to go if you want to get some shots of mom on her special day. However, the way to get her involved is to get the kids involved. That's right. So the minute that you bring in people that she loves and cares about, especially her kids or her grandkids, then the whole dynamic changes, and then it will be much easier to have her get in front of the camera because she'll have, you know, others there with her that she cares about. And it's a shot that she probably wants to see. Remember, she's not looking for a photo of herself. She knows what she looks like, but a photo of her with her children, with her siblings, you know, with people that she care about, well, that's a different matter. So just think in terms of small group shots, stay away from the solo stuff, and I think you'll get a lot more cooperation from mom and, you know, the other relatives that are hanging out at this particular event. The next thing, number two, is to work fast. Whatever trust you may have gained with the group photo approach, you can just as quickly lose it if you take too long to complete the picture. People feel self-conscious when they're just standing there and you're fiddling around with the dials and the lens and go, oh, let me see, where is that, you know, cord or whatever it happens to be that you're looking for. Don't do that to them, okay? Don't do that to them because it doesn't work and nobody really feels great standing there waiting for a photographer to get his or her act together. So before the gathering begins, set up your camera so that it's ready to go and that all you have to do is compose, focus, and shoot. Move quickly, everyone will be happier. And by the way, you'll get fresher expressions on the faces too. You know, if they're standing there kind of, you know, grimacing for 30 seconds or so, a minute, then that's not the shot you want. You want fresh smiles. And by the way, if you do end up having to take just a little bit longer than you anticipated, maybe something goes wrong, make sure that you have them restart their smiles so that they don't have a stale smile. They have something that's fresh. So go, okay, everyone, you know, just kind of work your jaw muscles there for a second. All right, then on two, let's smile again. You know, that sort of thing. Work fast. It's very important. Number three, and this will be the most controversial tip in the group here, but use fill flash if you can. There's a reason why many wedding photographers use fill flash outdoors. It's flattering for the subject. You have the light coming from the front, and whenever you have light coming from the front, then that softens features, right? It softens lines and wrinkles and all that stuff. And it also kind of flattens the features a bit too, the noses and so forth. It's a very flattering light. And when you're working outdoors, you don't necessarily need a diffuser on the flash because there's so much light already. It's already, generally speaking, fairly bright outside. So you don't have to put a flash diffuser or anything like that on there. It is nice if you can get the flash up a little bit. You know, if you have a hot shoe on top of your camera and you have a flash that's relatively tall, that's helpful. I don't think you have to go so far as to getting a bracket for the flash. That's what I do for event photography. I always have the flash on a bracket. But that's mainly for if I go indoors, you know, so that I can ensure I don't get red eye. And also, if they're near a wall or something, that moves the shadows down if I have the flash on a bracket. But that's not really necessary for outdoor fill flash. And also, you know, if you have a little pop-up flash on your camera or built-in flash, a lot of times, if you're not too far away, if you're relatively close to the subject, that will be enough light. That thing can put out enough light to serve as a fill flash. Now, the camera will take care of everything. And the easiest way to go is to just put the camera in program mode, turn on fill flash or always on or whatever that flash setting is, forced flash, sometimes it's called, whatever that happens to be, turn that on, be in an auto mode or a program mode, let the camera do all the heavy lifting. It will balance the ambient light with the flash output and all that stuff, and you will just end up with really nice looking pictures. You get a little sparkle in the eye, smooths out any lines, flattens the nose, opens up the eye sockets. It does all sorts of great things. I know some people are really determined to work with natural light only, but when you're working with folks, mom and such, fill flash is really a flattering way to go, and it really takes a worry out of it for you in terms of having to worry what direction the ambient light is coming from. You can even go with a little rim lighting, you know, have it, you know, on their shoulders or on their hair, turn on the fill flash, fire away, and then just reap beautiful pictures. It's great for this type of subject in this type of setting. Number four. This one's probably the most fun one on the list, and that's bring an instant printer if you have one. At family gatherings, instant printers are a blast. Why? Well, because you can make little prints right there on the spot, and people can take them away as keepsakes, take them home. They're fun to look at the event. It's one thing to look at a picture on the back of a camera or even on the mobile phone. It's another thing to look at a little print that you can walk away with as well. Now, what I use, what I've been using for the last couple months is the Fujifilm Instax Mini Evo. That's a hybrid instant camera, so it will take pictures that I can print, but the way that I use it in this kind of assignment, shall we say, is that I go ahead and take pictures with my normal camera, my Fujifilm X100V or the Olympus OM1 or the Pen F, and then I just send the pictures, the JPEGs that I want, to my iPhone, because they're on the iPhone. I can crop them a bit, touch them up a bit if I need to, you know, like adjust exposure or color balance or something. And then from the iPhone, I can send them to the camera for printing, you know, to the Mini Evo. And it works really great. I mean, I know it sounds like a lot, you know, okay, first you have to send the pictures, da, 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 da. But it's not really a lot because you're only sending the few pictures that you want to print. I'm on the back of it. I'm going, I want that one. I want that one. I want that one. Just send them to the iPhone. Just send the JPEGs to the iPhone. And then on the iPhone, I get a cool drink, sit in the shade so it's not too glary on my phone. say, oh yeah, I'm going to crop that up, and then just turn on my instant printer and just send them from the iPhone, the instant printer, and print them out. And then I like to spread them out on the table or something like that. Sometimes do multiples, like the group shots, have a couple of them out there. And then just watch people come by and they love them. They get such a kick out of those little prints. It's so much fun. And the Fujifilm printers are terrific. I mean, I really like the prints that are coming out of my little Instax camera. And if I take pictures with it, they're pretty good too, especially outdoors. And, that's a hybrid camera, so it records digital, so you can take as many pictures as you want and then just print the ones that you want. It's not like the old-fashioned Polaroid where you have to print everything that you take. Go ahead and shoot away with the Fujifilm, the one that I'm using, and then just print the shots that you want or send them from your iPhone to the Fujifilm. Now, what I would really love is a firmware update from Fujifilm that allowed me to send the images directly from my X100V to the Fujifilm Instax Mini Evo and then print them from there. I would love that. I think that would be really cool. I've tried little workarounds. I haven't found any way to make that work yet. I really do think it's a firmware update that I may never see, but that I could eternally hope for. Like so many features in my world that I hope for, maybe that one will show up as well. But regardless of what system you've cobbled together on this, being able to produce some instant prints on the spot really is the best party favor in so many ways, and I highly recommend it. And finally, number 5, email photos to everyone that wants them anyway, everyone that's involved. And if you do this regularly, in other words, if you say, I'll send everyone the group shot, and then you follow through and you actually send the group shot, do it in a timely manner, what happens is you build trust. People have confidence that they're actually going to receive a picture from you from the family event when you say that you're going to do it. And so going through a couple cycles of this where you say that you're going to send them stuff, you send them stuff, they receive stuff, they enjoy it. Then next time you ask them, hey, can we do a quick group shot? I'll make sure I send it to everyone. You're going to get a lot better participation. They'll move faster. They'll waste less of everyone's time. And they'll have bigger smiles on their face. So make sure that you email photos to everyone. Make this a regular thing. And by doing so, you'll build trust and they will pose for you more readily. So those are the 5 things. I'm just going to repeat them one more time. No solo portraits. Moms generally don't like those. Work fast. Use a fill flash outdoors. Bring an instant printer if you have one. And email photos to everyone. If you do those things, you're going to get more pictures. You're going to have more participation. And you're going to be able to really capture some terrific moments from family events, whether it's Mother's Day or some other family event. Finally, the last thing that I want to say about this upcoming Sunday, for those of you lucky enough to be able to spend time with your mom and other family members this weekend, take a moment to appreciate the gift that you are receiving. And to all the moms listening, happy Mother's Day. And thank you for everything that you do. The 2022 TDS Workshop Scoreboard, that's kind of what it's become, right, the last month or so, as the seats start dwindling for these different events that we have. So I'm going to update you on this week's workshop scoreboard. The Infrared Photography Workshop, which starts in May, that one is sold out. The Ultimate Black and White Photography Workshop, another online event for August. That one just sold out today, actually. So it's full now. So both of those are full. The September 2022 Eastern Sierra Photography Workshop, that's a physical workshop, have 2 seats available for that one. And the November 2022 Oregon Photography Workshop, I have 3 seats available for that one. Next week, I'm going to go and do a camping test run, two-night camping test run, testing some of the things that I'm going to be using in the Eastern Sierra because we're out in the field a lot and I've got some great goodies. So the week after that, I'm going to have a fun photographer camping special podcast. It'll be 2 weeks from this podcast. And I'm going to talk about some of the new gear that I've discovered and that I tested in the field. And I'll have some pictures and all sorts of good stuff. And I have found some really fun stuff, some really fun camping. So, I mean, camping is right up there, I think, with photography in terms of cool gear. So I've got some great stuff for you. So that'll be in 2 weeks. Stay tuned for that. I think you'll really enjoy that show. And if you want to learn more about either the Eastern Sierra Workshop or the Oregon Coast Workshop, just click on the Workshops tab. That's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Or go to thenimblephotographer.com. Click on Workshops there. You can get all the info and reserve your spot. Rock and roll. Oh, by the way, one last thing on Eastern Sierra. So I've been working with the Silver Maple Inn. You know, they're open now. You know, they kind of closed during snowy season. We're rolling. We've got our block of rooms. We've got our meeting area there in the Kane House. We're working on some fun stuff. You know, that becomes really real when you start, working with the folks that you're going to be working with up there in the Eastern Sierra. My juices are already flowing, shall we say. Okay, enough of that. Let's get on to the next story. I found a review for you on the OM System Digital ED 40 to 150 millimeter f4.0 Pro lens. So this is the one that's the smaller one that they just came out with. So the 40 to 150 f2.8, that's the one that I shoot with. In fact, I ran an article on Digital Story about five lenses that I recommend for serious enthusiasts and pros, micro four thirds lenses. And in that article, it's on the site right now, in that article, I have a comparison of the f2.8 version of this lens and the f4 version, just side by side, so you can see the difference. And it's substantial. It feels like, when you look at that picture, that the f4 version is about half the length of the f2.8 version. So that's a substantial reduction. So then the question comes to mind, how good is that lens, right? I mean, you're saving a fair amount of weight in a lot of storage space. So how good is the lens? You know you're giving up one f-stop, but beyond that, are you giving up anything else? So I found this review on amateurphotographer.com. The link to it's in the show notes. I'm just going to read you a few paragraphs from it because I think it's pretty interesting. And let's see what they say. OMDS says the lens is, in effect, a scaled-down version of the Olympus Digital ED 40 to 150 f2.8 Pro with an optical formula derived from its larger aperture sibling. This is likely to be a good thing given that the 40 150 f2.8 gives excellent image quality. However, like the Olympus Digital ED 12 to 45mm f4.0 Pro and the aforementioned 20mm f1.4, the new lens also employs a simplified physical design with neither a programmable function button on the barrel nor a focus ring that can be snapped back towards the camera to engage manual focus. Okay, so this is me talking now. So what they're saying is that the optical formula seems, you know, similar or akin to the F2.8 model, but you do lose some of the physical goodies. And, you know, not having the programmable button is one thing. Not having the snapback manual focus ring, you know, that's another, that's one of the things that I really like. The lenses that I carry with me for event photography, the F2.8, the 40 to 150 F2.8 Pro, the F2.8 12 to 40, the new one, the Pro 2, and the 17mm F1.8, those all have that snapback focus, which I really like. So anyway, so you're giving that up. Anyway, okay, back to them. The 40-150 f4 neatly occupies the middle ground between the more expensive f2.8 sibling and the entry-level digital ED 40-150 f4-5.6R. which costs much less than either of the other two optics. It's clear that OMDS views it mainly as a travel-friendly option that should nicely complement small cameras like the EM5 Mark III, rather than action-friendly option for the EM1 or the OM1 user. But how does it stack up in practice? In many respects, the 40-150 f4 delivers nicely on its promise. Like the 12-45 f4, it adapts the optical design of its larger, more expensive f2.8 sibling to deliver lovely, crisp images from a small, lightweight package. Indeed, it is remarkably small for a 300mm equivalent lens with premium optics. You don't even have to go searching for a sweet spot in terms of focal length and aperture, as it delivers plenty of detail at f4. The real trick is not to stop down too far, and that is absolutely true. There are, however, some compromises to accept in return for the compact size. Naturally, the f4 maximum aperture isn't great for blurring backgrounds, while autofocus isn't quite as good at keeping up with fast-moving subjects compared to the more expensive optics. But I suspect many users will happily accept these drawbacks in return for the lens' sheer portability. Overall, then, the 40-150 f4 is a fine little lens that neatly fills a gap in the lineup between the entry-level and the f2.8 Pro zooms that cover the same range. It's particularly good match for compact Micro Four Thirds bodies such as the EM5 Mark III, but it's just a good choice for the EM1 or the OM1 user looking to travel light. It would make an excellent companion for the 12-40mm or 12-45mm standard zooms. So they say at the end of the review, 4.5 stars out of 5, it's recommended. I think this is a cool little lens. I mean, if I didn't already have the f2.8 version, I would really look closely at this, because you're going to get much better quality, or you're going to get better quality anyway, than you will with the entry-level zoom. And it's the image quality itself, which at the end of the day is very important to all of us, is going to be closer to the f2.8 optic without nearly the size or the weight that goes with it. And yes, you are giving up some physical features, but beyond that, you're really not giving up a whole lot, which means you can have a very nice equivalent 80-300mm zoom lens that delivers pro quality images themselves without having to spend a ton of money, right? You know, for much less money than you would on the f2.8 version. So I think it's a cool little idea. And, if you don't have a longer zoom right now that you really like and that you really trust, this one could fit the bill nicely. It's a good little review, and there's more on it. I only read you a little bit of it. There's more on it, and the link to it is in the show notes. Dorothea Lange, Words in Pictures. So I found this article on lens culture, and I have a link to it in the show notes. And this is basically an article about a show that ran at the Museum of Modern Art back a couple years ago in 2020. And there's a book out for it. The museum book is available on Amazon. I have a link to it in the show notes. So if you're intrigued by the little bit I'm going to talk about here, you can get the book, and you can read the entire article that has a lot of pictures on lensculture.com. But the idea here is about having pictures and words work together in the photographs. Let me read you what this author says from Lens Culture, and we'll take it from there. It starts out with a quote, or at least the part that I'm quoting here. "All photographs can be fortified by words," Lange wrote. "For her, words could extend the power of an image, not just causing an emotional response, but also urging the viewer not only to see, but to read, to listen carefully." She wrote that her image captions should carry not only factual information, but also added clues to attitudes, relationships, and meanings, calling those captions connective tissue. Some of her image titles exhibit a matter-of-factness, dry wit. On the Road to Los Angeles, California, 1937, features two men walking down a dirt road toward a billboard advertising to take the train next time. Goes on and on. There are many examples, I should say, where she used words either in the image itself or as part of the caption to kind of create a more full-bodied experience. All right, back to the author. The power of words also extended beyond image titles to encompass the voice of her subjects. Whilst photographing, Lang took copious field notes on her assignments, recording where, when, and who she was depicting and what they had to say. The exhibition, and that's the one from 2 years ago, shines a light on these collections and how in pairing the photographs with the subject's own words, Lang empowered their voices. The end papers of her book, An American Exodus, which she worked on with her husband, the agricultural economist Paul Taylor, hold the words of her subjects. Upon entering the gallery, these words feature prominently as an introduction to the images on view, giving voice to the protagonists of her work. One last paragraph here. Throughout the show, wall text enriches the images with fragments of Lang's own notes and extended quotes from those she photographed. This combination of words and pictures hits both head and heart. The photographs touch the viewer, but the words allow them to do more than that. They shine a light on the injustices of the wider world through experience and fact. They also illuminate the inner thoughts and methods of a photographer committed to bringing change to the world with the tools at hand. And as I mentioned, the book from this show, which I haven't seen the book physically, but I was looking at some pages of it on the catalog, is available, and I have a link to it in the show notes, that really kind of dig into this whole idea of words and pictures working together, not only in the pictures themselves, but also thinking about the titles and the captions that you may want to put with your pictures to create this richer experience that shines more light on your images. I just thought it was something really worth thinking about. It's something that I particularly think about when I'm doing street photography and working with signs and things like that, but then also spending some time on my captions, making sure I have that information correct. If you like this, I would take a look at that article on lensculture.com and maybe even get the book from the show. It's good stuff, and Dorothea Lange, her images are fantastic, but this concept that she's discussing just takes it to another dimension. All right, stick here for a little virtual camera club news. First off, I want to tell you that I'm going to return with another installment from my favorite adventure series. Next week, I got another one that I'm working on. If you like the first two, one from Beijing and then the other one from Iceland, the Icelandic wedding, I think you'll like this next one coming up next week. So I just wanted to put that on your radar. Want to give a big thanks to our Inner Circle members. These are the folks that support our podcast and our community month in and month out. Thank you, Inner Circle members, so much for your support. And if you're interested in joining this wonderful group of artists, then all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Store. You can nose around, and hopefully you will join us in 2022. Also want to remind you about my writing on Medium.com. I have way over 50 articles published now, and it's a place where I write a little differently. It's a little bit more personal, although I do cover, you know, newsy photography things. But it's just a little different slice of writing for me. I encourage you to go over there and take a look. All you have to do is go to medium.com and just enter my name, search on it. You can take a look at the articles there. And if you see something you like, clap for it. Clap for it. Let other people know that this is something that you favored. Also want to mention the affiliate tiles that we have in the second column of the Digital Story for both Amazon and B&H Photo. And if you're going to make a purchase, if you click on one of those tiles first and then navigate to whatever you're going to buy, that really helps support the site. And if you're going to make a big purchase, it's even more important, right? Anyway, and those of you who do that, I thank you so much. I appreciate it. And finally, a big shout out to our friends at Red River Paper. They're the folks that have been the longest running sponsor of this podcast. And I mean long running sponsor. I just love these guys and gals for sure. I've been talking with them about the possibility of doing an online printing workshop for the 2023 season. I think it's going to happen. I feel really good about it. And I have their support as well. These are the kind of things that you have when you have a partner, someone that cares about our photography community. They work with us and they help us in more ways than just putting an ad tile on the site. But speaking of that ad tile, if you want anything for your inkjet printer, whether it's paper or ink or accessories, envelopes, all that good stuff, please click on the Red River Paper tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. And be sure to check out their Facebook page at facebook.com/Red River Paper. A huge thanks to them for supporting this show. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. I am working on such cool stuff for our upcoming shows. Make sure you come back and join me. See you next Tuesday. Get out there and take some pictures. Bye-bye now.